This is Dr. Douglene Jackson, and I'm honored to be your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color. It's a podcast dedicated to supporting therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color in their roles around the world. Today's guest is Dr. Tomiko Faison. She's a faith walker, wife, mom, serial entrepreneur, author, professor, real estate investor, podcast host, business consultant and coach, inspirational speaker, and poet. She holds a BS in radiologic science and a MS in OT from UNC Chapel Hill. Also, she has a certificate in low vision rehab from University of Alabama in Birmingham and a business coaching certificate from North Carolina State. Dr. Faison does so many things, and I'm honored to be here with her today. She's CEO of multiple therapy businesses and also works in academia, being an assistant professor at Duke University and capstone mentor at Boston University. Her goal is to help 1 million therapy entrepreneurs and leaders around the world, and she is rocking it, everybody. So I'm going to invite you right now, Tomiko, to tell us about yourself and how you first became interested in occupational therapy.
Thank you, Douglene, for the introduction. It feels funny to be on this side of the mic. So about myself, I am from born and raised in Dudley, North Carolina, very small town, rural area. I tell many people I grew up in poverty. I am a first generation college grad, and I knew I wanted to go to college, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought maybe business and marketing because I loved entrepreneurship from a young age, but was told by someone in my family that I really needed to go into the health professions because that's job security. And so I thought biology pre-med. Be a doctor. You're doing well in school. You should be a doctor. So I went into UNC Chapel Hill thinking I was going to be a doctor. And shortly after taking a few science classes, decided that's not what I wanted to do anymore. Still didn't know what I wanted to do. Got a kidney stone one day and ended up in the ER. And a student x-rayed me. She was a radiologic science student at UNC, which I didn't know that major existed. It sounded like job security. I was fascinated with the technology. And so I decided I was going to go into x-ray. While I was in x-ray school or radiologic science, the radiologic science program, I met a mentor, an African-American male professor, who told me to look into other allied health professions. And I was like, yeah, I want to do PT. PT sounds really interesting. I started doing my volunteer hours in PT. I did 1,000 hours. I spent my summers with a PT. And one day he asked me to come to one of his classes. He taught a class called Introduction to Allied Health Professions. And in that class, I was supposed to hear the PT speak. But when I got there, the OT was speaking before the PT, and I was mad. I mean, I was like, I came here to hear the PT. I had some classes with OTs when I was in the radiologic science program, and it didn't really resonate with me. I saw a lot of people knitting. I don't knit. And so I thought, what kind of profession is this? So I didn't have that interest. But when I heard this person speak about OT's role in mental health, that resonated with me. And in that moment, hearing her speak, I changed my mind and said, I don't want to do PT anymore. I want to do OT. And I went back and told him, and he said, well, wait, let's, you need to probably hear the speech therapist talk and the clinical laboratory scientist and all these other. And I said, no, it's OT. That's what I know for a fact. That's what I want to do. And so I ended up taking a year off to get my prerequisites completed and applied to OT school, and I have no regrets.
I'm with you on that. No regrets. I find OT to be the best profession on the planet. I don't care what anyone wants to say, but it's interesting to me how you talked about going into the healthcare profession because it offered that job security. And in listening to your story and hearing job security, here it is, you're an entrepreneur and you're also in leadership. So let's talk about your entrepreneurial and leadership endeavors. Can you tell us about your current roles, including what attracted you to those roles? And what did it take to get there?
Yeah, so I'll start with how I became an OT entrepreneur. After I graduated, 2 years after I graduated, my first son was born 3 months early. And I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I had talked about it when I was in school. But people said, you know, you got to work X amount of years before you can become an entrepreneur. And so I did have a regular job working at a psych facility. But after I had him, I just decided I know a lot about development, and I personally just wanted to be available to him. They also gave him a poor prognosis. And so I just stopped, you know, I just quit. I quit. There was even a daycare on site and people told me, you gotta be kidding. I cannot believe you're going to quit your job. You got good state benefits. How are you going to, you know, why would you do that? And I said, it's just going to be sink or swim. I have a needs assessment from my class that, you know, that second year in the OT program, we did a needs assessment. We created a business plan. I took that information and I marketed myself. Back then, we didn't have all the technology we have now. So I created brochures using a little CD and I mailed them out to different group homes. And eventually someone responded and I started contracting with group homes. Later began contracting with state facilities and just continued to grow in the contracting area, which, you know, it was a risk when I did it. I did work PRN at skilled nursing facilities and home health while I was growing it. I added the low vision services after working with someone at a psych facility who was misdiagnosed as being psychotic when really she was just an older lady who was taking a lot of medications and she mixed them up because she could not read the label, which that really gave me more interest in low vision. So then I did the UAB certificate in low vision. I shadowed a doctor who gave me a referral while I was shadowing her, asking for OTs to go into the home to help people. She said, you know, we really need to be proactive. We need to work with people before they get into a psych facility, before they fall and break their hips if they have low vision. And so that business is ran with a partner, Low Vision Rehab Solutions. And then the consulting work is really limited to one large behavioral health company in North Carolina where they're at onboarding OTs. I've started creating courses because I've limited the amount of people that I can work with one-on-one with through FACE and consulting. The leadership roles, gosh, you know, we have the North Carolina Black OT Collective, which thank you for helping me with some of that, answering some of the questions as we were developing that. I'm on my way out, so we have 1 year terms. But I started that with a student who reached out to me as the only Black female student in a program. She reached out to me on LinkedIn. And then I have the roles at Duke as an assistant professor, working on entrepreneurial courses for students who need entrepreneurship education. I think I'll end there, but you know, as we talked about before the show started, we both do a lot of different things. It keeps life interesting. And it's a blessing to be able to have variety and diversity, to just to be able to have that ability to not just do one thing.
Yes, definitely. And as occupational therapists, as Black occupational therapists, we're not well represented in the field. Depending on which stat you look at, we're at about, 5% or less? Right. When it comes to Black occupational therapists and as a whole, clinicians of color, we don't make up a lot of our field. So has that fact impacted your entrepreneurial or leadership roles? And if so, how has it done so?
Yeah, it definitely has had an impact as an entrepreneur. So early on, when I began having to generate referrals, I ran into some resistance in terms of like, am I really qualified to be able to provide the service? I was asked at one point, should I put my, had this conversation about putting my face on the website and the brochures. And I've had people be, you know, that some things were implicit and indirect, and I've had some very explicit situations where people were told, you know, why would you work for Tamiko? You're better than that. You should be the person, your face should be, you know, at the top, and you should be the person running the business. And so those have been challenges. I honestly believe when if I'm called to do something, no person can stop it from happening. So some of the people who were resistant are now very receptive and refer a lot. And I've also had people who, you know, who have been great allies, people who know when others are being discriminatory against me and have called it out and have shared with me that this person said this. So, you know, the work related to ensuring that this is a profession that truly welcomes all, requires all people to be involved in it, right? Like not just the people of color, the other people have to step up. And I've certainly had that experience.
And it's unfortunate, but when you look at things, you have accomplished so much. And I know we don't like to toot our own horns, and you talked about doing a lot, being busy, and I just go to your website and it shows so much that you do. You've been featured in magazines. You've been giving many awards just to acknowledge all the great work that you do. And recently you received the Excellence in the Advancement of Occupational Therapy from the AOTA. So I commend you in all that you do. And one thing I want to touch back on is you talked about having a student reach out to you, and that's how you went to start the North Carolina Black Occupational Therapy Collective. Talk about mentorship and why that matters.
That's such a good question, because I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation now about belonging, and without having people who look like you and people who have shared lived experience, sometimes it's hard to feel like you belong, even in the best efforts, you know, where there are lots of, you know, efforts to communicate about diversity, equity, inclusion, and there's policies, but when you look around and you don't see people who look like you and you don't have shared lived experiences and people who can connect in those ways, it can be challenging. So having a mentor can make a huge difference in terms of helping a person get to, you know, to whatever their goals are. And so I certainly had that in the experience that I mentioned earlier with the professor. His name was Dr. Thorpe, who kind of took me under his wing. He said from the first day, he's like, hey, he stopped me and said, I'm glad you're here. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, no, it's good to see you. I'm glad that you are here. And we had many conversations whenever I had challenges, and he could relate to those. So sometimes I would think, you know, nobody else is dealing with this. But then to hear him say, yeah, I did deal with this, and this is how I dealt with it. And now I'm like, he was second to the top in the allied health department. And so knowing that I had that support, it's very important for me to help give back in that way. And so that student that was reaching out was, you know, was saying like, hey, can I talk to you about, I think the way she worded it is, can I talk to you about who I am? And can we just have a conversation? And so I said, yeah, we just jumped on Zoom and we had a conversation. I said, you know, this person needs support.
And that's important to have that support. And that's in something as basic as navigating getting into the profession. So we have those prescribed roles that we're all familiar with, but you've taken a different path. So what advice would you give to therapists of color seeking to go into, let's first talk about entrepreneurship?
First thing I would say is know that this is something that you're called to do, because sometimes when you look like at my website or look at like what you're doing, sometimes people just see all the glamour. This looks so great and fabulous, and they don't know that, you know, about some of the challenges that are related to it. So don't do it just because you see someone else doing it. Know that by seeing someone else doing that, it is possible, but know for sure that it's something that you are being called to do. So when the going gets rough, that you can, you know, you can hang in there and stick with it. I would also say get the mentor, like what we just talked about, have a mentor to help you navigate the process. I also believe in investing. So investing in a coach or a consultant, someone who has accomplished what you have already accomplished. And sometimes that's sacrificial. You know, when I decided I want to write a book, I said, let me find someone who has published a book and got it to a number one spot and find out what they did. If I want to do real estate investing, I find other people who have accomplished certain things and I'm willing to pay them. And sometimes people will ask for money and sometimes they won't. You know, sometimes people will just give back to you. But I would say find your group, your mentors, your coaches, your consultants, your advisory board. I've had an advisory board for the businesses where I have four people that will look at everything about the business, the strategic action plan, the money, like the profit and loss statement, what's going on with it, the balance sheet, and get advice from them. Take it all in. I believe that there's safety in a multitude of counselors. So have your tribe. That is key, because it is just not something that you can do alone.
Most definitely. Having that tribe for that moral support, for that professional support. And when you think about leadership, what advice would you give for those who want to consider going into leadership? Because it's not easy. Some are elected, some are appointed, but I always say start by throwing your hat in the ring. So what advice would you give those seeking to go into leadership?
Oh, that is such a hard question for me, because I will admittedly say I have been a reluctant leader. So I've always been okay with leading from the background. Like I don't need to be in the spotlight. I'll tell you this quick story. I remember I was working at a hospital and somewhat reserved in the setting, to be quite honest. I was working in the hospital. We had a lot of people in one office, and the supervisor was out for the day. And I remember that she would start a meeting every morning, the supervisor, but she was out that day. So everybody was just sitting, you know, waiting for this meeting. And I was looking down, and then I looked up, and like everybody was looking at me. And I'm like, what are y'all looking? Why is everybody looking at me? And I said, oh, we're waiting for you to start the meeting. So I had been appointed the leader without anyone saying that I was supposed to be the leader, but it was just based on my work ethic, like what I was doing in the setting, how innovative I was. So I've been very comfortable leading from behind. But if you do good work and people will notice it, you will become a leader. And you can be an everyday leader. So you don't always have to have the formal title. You can decide how you want to lead. But I do encourage people of color, particularly to lead. We need more representation in leadership. And I think sometimes that requires getting comfortable, sometimes being uncomfortable. It's not always the most comfortable situations when you're in leadership spaces, but it is possible to lead and know that you can do it.
Yes, believing in yourself and taking those first steps, it's critical, definitely. And you've done so much, and you spoke about in the intro some of the things you've done in the past. What are you looking to do going forward? So, like, what's next for you?
The courses that I've been working on are one of the things that I've it's a big interest right now, since I can't take on a lot of one-to-one clients for business coaching. That's been hard for me, because many people that reach out to me are people of color who have had experiences in systems that were not pleasant. And, you know, I feel like I just feel this pulling on me sometimes, like I can relate to those experiences and I want them to be able to be successful entrepreneurs. But because of other things that I'm doing, I can't always take, you know, with so many people one-on-one. So the courses, I have one course that just came out on real estate investing called OT Really. EI, real EI, which the EI stands for estate investing. I am also feeling a strong pull to help decrease the wealth gap. And as I become more educated about investing and I'm in circles where typically there are not a lot of people that look like me who have generational wealth. You know, many of us don't have that advantage of having generational wealth, but learning how to have multiple streams of income and how to invest and leverage money, not for the sake of boasting about having a lot of money, but for all the things that you can do when you have more wealth. There's lots of different ways people can give and serve. And I feel that I've been blessed with some knowledge and skill related to generating wealth, you know, coming from poverty and wanting to be able to share with other people on how you can do that.
That's amazing, because so many people would just take what they know, live their life, and just say, hey, I did it, you can do it too. But to take that extra step and want to give back through your knowledge and create platforms where people can come and take courses and invest in themselves, that's phenomenal. I can't say enough to that, and it's commendable. And I thank you for that, for being that person, because more of that is needed. Very much so.
Thank you.
And it's great to see you being the one doing that. Are there any other professional goals that you have? If you think of Tomiko in 5 years from now, what do you think you'll be working on?
Oh, wow. In 5 years from now, I think I will probably be doing more travel and seminars related to the work and the streams of income that I've been able to generate. So I have 7 that I've included on the website, with the coaching, consulting, real estate investing, writing, all of those. I think putting those into packages and being able to feel the energy from an audience. I do like the live audience, being able to feel the energy from the audience helping to just educate people about those resources might be something that I would do in 5 years. I have a 13-year-old, so in 5 years, he will be gone. So the way that I structure my work may look quite different once he's out of the house.
Definitely. And it's always important to center what's important in your life, devoting yourself to that, because it's not all about work. I follow you. I see the things you do, and your family really is valuable to you. And you center that in all that you do, and your faith too. So thank you for walking the talk, being true to you, and showing the world how Dr. Tomiko Faison accomplishes all that she does and pouring out into us as well. So I want to ask you, how can we support you in your current and your future roles and endeavors?
I think being available to mentor others. I want to just do a shout out to all the mentors with Duke OTD, because we have a mentorship program where students, they fill out an application after they're accepted, and they can request a mentor outside of Duke OTD that will be available to them for at least one academic year for monthly check-ins. And the support has been phenomenal. We had 32 students out of 44 ask for mentors this year. I was not expecting that. I'm like, okay, yeah, 15, 16. I can find 15, 16 mentors, but 32. So I found 32 mentors. So that would, you know, if you're willing to mentor a student, definitely would love for you to do so at Duke. But even if it's not at Duke, if you can make yourself available to mentor someone else from an underrepresented group, that helps support me in my role.
That's awesome. Yes. Getting others to join you in giving back.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's one thing I say to folks, and not everyone understands it. When I put things out there, sometimes people think the whole agenda is still business, but the agenda is giving. And if people can understand that really, it is really more blessed to give than to receive. You always have, right? If you're always giving, you'll always have.
And you are always giving. You haven't mentioned the ways on social media that you connect and pour into others. How many people are in your social media group on Facebook?
Oh, yeah. We have over 11,000 members in that Facebook group. And yeah, that has been a blessing. That group was given to me by another OT. And she and I think she knew like what my spirit of giving. So when she was thinking about transitioning, she reached out to me.
Yes. And I've tapped in there sometimes and seen you just give things out like, hey, I want to support entrepreneurs. And you all had a Shark Tank the other day and selected three people to bring through. Like, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. We did a shark OT. We got OT Sharkish Tank, and we had three winners. And then I think we had three other people that we still help support in different ways. And we had cash prizes. I forgot to say earlier when you asked what's next is scholarships. I do want to offer scholarships to people. So when we look at our finances and our monies, and we know that, you know, our needs are met and we have more than that, I'd like to be able to then take monies and create scholarships. And I've had conversations with people where they're like, oh yeah, it's $300,000 to start a scholarship. People are donating $300,000 and millions of dollars. Like, wouldn't that be great to be able to have that amount of money to donate back to students who are having to borrow, I mean, hundreds and thousands of dollars of loans to get an education? You know, some people are able to pay for it and other people are not. And I know that looks different across, you know, that has no color to it necessarily, right? There are lots of people from different socioeconomic backgrounds that struggle with being able to live, to be quite frank, you know, after they graduate and they have so much debt. Like, they may take on their mortgage debt and cars and all their utilities and all that, plus on top of that, $200,000 worth of student loan debt.
and if they're even afforded the opportunity to take on that debt to secure housing and vehicles and things like that because of debt to income ratio.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Good point. Good point. Yeah. Someone messaged me yesterday and said, I think they said that they start out with 100,000, but it's scary to be like 200,000 if they take the entire time to pay it off. I mean, that is a house. Like that could be a home. And so that might be a trade-off.
Definitely. My student loans are a home, but I have a home and I'm grateful for that. But yeah, those are all things we need to consider. So as we wrap this up, I just want to know, is there anything else you would like the audience to know?
Yeah, I would like the audience to know that having multiple streams of income is something that's possible. And it requires a person to think outside of the box and know that they don't have to work alone and that they can have systems in place that will allow them to do more than one thing. And also to know that not everyone will understand it. And, you know, we'll look at you sometimes in awe, like, how in the world are you able to do it? But that doesn't mean it's something that you cannot do. So think about the gifts and talents that you have and how you can diversify those gifts and talents into multiple streams of income. And then how you can give back once you're able to do that.
Definitely, definitely important. All of that. Two thumbs up, clap, clap, clap. I just want to thank you so much, Dr. Tomiko Faison, entrepreneur, leader, extraordinaire. You do so much. Taking the time out for this interview today really has been an honor for me to be here with you. Just knowing that you've been on the other side of this and with me just coming in as host and having you as my first interviewee, it's been truly an honor. And if there are any summarizing thoughts you want to add, feel free to do so at this time. I think I just asked you if there's anything else you wanted them to know, but definitely how can they reach you is key.
Yeah. So I'm on social media. My largest platform is LinkedIn. So just Tomiko Faison on LinkedIn, Dr. Tomiko Faison. That's where I post. I try to post at least once a week. Sometimes it's every other week, but I'll usually post some links to articles and some information about different streams of income and challenges that I may have had and how I've overcame those. I play around with Instagram. So if you want to see like my real self, you can check me out on Instagram, Tomiko Faison, Wealthy Woman. And then the Facebook group, Occupational Therapy Entrepreneurs. Feel free to join if you're an entrepreneur or an aspiring entrepreneur. And then also on Facebook, I have a page, Tomiko Faison, Wealthy Woman.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. If you all aren't following her, do go ahead, head on to those platforms and find her there. And I want to thank you all for listening. And don't forget to follow, follow, follow. That connection is key. So until next time.
Thank you, Dougleen.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you.